The Red Shirt Interviews podcast is a production of the Red Shirt Geeks. Find us at redshirtgeeks.com, where every expendable hero has a home.
Shut up, Wesley.
Red Shirt Geeks.
Hide behind the mound of dead Barnes.
Red Shirt Geeks.
Welcome to the Red Shirt Interviews, the show that has some wonderful and special guests for the Red Shirt Geeks podcast. I'm your host, Laz D, the pseudo Kiwi, and with me is
the dementedly dysfunctional Dave.
Welcome to Mentally Dysfunctional Dave, it's great to have you.
Thanks.
And in this episode, we have, of course, our very, very special guest, Marvel inker Bob Wyatchek.
Red Shirt Geeks!
All right, Red Shirts, thanks very much for joining us with another episode of the Red Shirt Interviews. That's right, the spinoff series from the main Red Shirt Geeks podcast. We've been talking to so many people, we had to give it its own show. And we've had some fantastic guests in the past, and hopefully in the future as well. And tonight is no exception. We have a fantastic guest with us. We are honored and blessed to have the wonderful Bob Wyatchek with us this evening. Thank you for joining us, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Now you're going to make me blush now.
Well, we can't see it anyway, so that's all right.
Okay. Well, no, you know, it's interesting you should say that because I was just at the New York City Comic Con, at Javits Center in New York City, and people come up to me and they say, you're a legend in this industry. I never ever thought of myself as that, and to this day, I still can't accept that fact because to me, the real legends in my industry, in the comic book industry, were like Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, Don Heck, Bernie Wrightson, and all, the guys that came later, and I can go on and, naming all the names, but, and the writers, and also, the guys who came before them, in the late 30s and, into the 40s, who really, created this industry, which I'm so, blessed to be working in. So, I appreciate that introduction, I really do.
Well, I mean, go ahead, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. No, I was just, you said that you were at the New York Comic Con. I was, just talking to Lars about that earlier. The New York Comic Con had like crazy numbers this year. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah. It actually, apparently the attendance outdid, San Diego. That's what I heard.
That's incredible.
It's amazing. We knew it was big.
I wasn't there at San Diego. My son, Ian, who was visiting out there in California at the time, he went there. He said it was pretty big. And then when he came to me, to the New York City one, he said, this is bigger than the New York Con. I mean, the New York, the San Diego Con, definitely.
That's awesome. I'm happy to hear about that because that means it's a little bit closer and easier to get to for me next year.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we actually today we went to a local one here in Virginia. It was what they call the Tidewater Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
We were impressed at the number of people. I mean, Virginia, this is only the second year we've had a con here, and we were really, really surprised at the numbers. They were a huge improvement from last year that we were told. So it's good to see that, there are more and more people feeling comfortable and actually feeling confident to be able to go to these events. So, obviously, you've spent your career working with a pen in your hand. What is it like when somebody comes up to you and says, there are some of the best things I've ever read have had your stamp on them?
Oh, well, thank you again. Well, it ranges. I've been going to conventions, when I was a fan since 1967, believe it or not. And back then, I just want, if you don't mind me giving a little bit of history here, I'll get back.
Oh, please,
get
back to answering your question. But and the first professional I ever met was Jim Steranko, was very famous for doing Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. for Marvel, and then from then he just blossomed into I think one of the most finest storytellers. Mm-hmm. I think in this industry and really changed the industry for the better in a lot of cases, bringing cinematography to comics even more. And so I said from 67 on, I've gone to at least one. So that's how many years ago. And so it's been interesting now when from being a fan and now I'm on the other side of the table being a professional and talking to the fans themselves. even though I'm still kind of have that fanboy inside of me. It's not as much as it used to be, but it's interesting. A lot of people come up to me and say, "I loved your work here. I loved your work there." And especially, it's always, I would say 9 times out of 10, it's usually the work I did with Paul Smith on the X-Men, the Uncanny X-Men, mm-hmm. back in the 80s. And which is good, because I still look back at that work and I say, that's very nice work. People say, if you look at your old work and you kind of like, if you don't wince at it, there's something wrong with you. Well, I don't know. In the beginning, I think is what, when you start off, I look back at my early stuff when I first got started and I said, I could have done better there. But we all do, every artist goes through that. And people could bring up, books for me to sign and all that. So they'll always bring up that particular project, which I don't mind. I don't mind them saying, I really loved your work on this. I wish you guys would work together again and, that kind of thing. And, I find out there's one or two people that I'll actually bring out something that I did that I've even forgotten about or that not many people like. Like I did a run on Spider-Woman, which people don't remember, mm-hmm. and over Steve Lealoha. Then I did a run on, before that on the Legion of Superheroes when I first started at DC by myself. Now that the Legion of Superheroes is kind of getting a refurbished, people are starting to think about looking back at that old stuff and bringing that up to me. So no, I enjoy it very much. People say that when they come up to me, I say, do you mind signing like more than 2 books? I say, I'll sign as many books as you want. An artist who has, like a line around the tables, like a couple of tables. I have a pretty good, following of people there. But if I had a long line, I would say, no, I'll just sign a few because I've got to keep the line going.
Right. So, it's actually great to see the entire, the evolution of comic books. Because as you said, with Jim Steranko, it brought the evolution of these, the works as we've gone on from the, what we saw initially in, say, in the 30s, mm-hmm. To what we see now, the technology has advanced so far that while computers have, obviously brought in a huge advantage towards, producing things more quickly, it's still, you see the hand-drawn works, the stuff that, like we're looking at your profile picture it's basically, it's that, I don't want to say cliche, I want to say classic. It's a classic look of an artist who is pouring their heart and soul into a creation that will inspire others to do the same. And, we have been able to speak to a number of different people from a number of different professions. And what is really nice is that your particular profession is still one that largely clings to the same technology that was there when comic books became a thing. Uh-huh. You're putting pencil to paper, pen to paper, color, and it's the same formula.
Yeah, it's just the way it's delivered. A lot of people prefer the on the paper. I like the tactile feel with a pen in my hand doing it on the paper. I have nothing against the artist, really drawing on the computer and on their iPad or whatever they use and their main computer at home and drawing on their pad, that way. I don't frown upon that at all. But I think what is missing is that a lot of, and this is what I've heard from other professionals. I have not worked with such a penciler myself so far, but, what they'll do is they will not draw on paper. They will draw on the computer. And to ink it, what they will do is they will scan it and send me the scan of their work, which they have penciled on the computer, and I will ink. So I'm they're in the 21st century at drawing it, and then when they send it to me, I kind of bring it into the late 20th century back by ink, which is kind of an interesting combination. But a lot of people, a lot of inkers will ink it on the computer. What they call, which is a misnomer, computer inking, because that's kind of a silly term because there's no ink involved. So I don't understand why they call it computer inking.
Yeah.
I guess they just don't have any other term for it. I guess that's the reason. And obviously, no, it's not ink, so what else could it be? But so I don't mind at all. But there are a lot of pencilers that I've spoken to other artists, as I said, that they don't want to draw on paper. which is kind of, it's sad because if that's all you have is the computer in front of you, and that's all you're going to, and that's all you're going to do, I think that's really kind of putting yourself in like in a box, and kind of, it's kind of a myopic view, because I think they should do both. Learn how to do both. Get a pencil in your hand and draw on paper, because it's only going to help you when you're drawing on the computer, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. My my father also happens to be an artist, and what's that?
What does he do?
Mostly design work. he's done a lot of different things in the past. Right. And I'm sorry. And, you know, he went to the Art Institute, you know, and he's done a lot of stuff along those lines. Mm-hmm. And it's getting hard out there for people that prefer, you know, the pen and paper, or who prefer the paintbrush. You know, it's definitely the field is starting to narrow for those that are more into computers. You know, I mean, is it affecting you at all in the comic book industry?
No, because, you know, as I said, you could scan the work in. I think there could be editors down the road. So far, I myself have not encountered them, but there could be editors down the road saying, we only do computer, you know, inking or computer drawing and all that. That could come. Sure. On. Who knows?
But God, so, I hope not.
Well, I hope not, too, because I think they, as long as you get the work done, it looks good, and the book sells because of the artist, whoever it might be, that's fine. I think they're not really, you know, looking to say, you have to do it this way. I'm just saying, you know, I think the artist should know both, but you know, that's up to the artist, you know, to make that, you know, to make his or her decision about that.
Sure, I agree totally. I just personally think that there is just a beauty to that hand drawn art that you can't mimic with a computer.
Yeah, and if you also you think about it, you have the hand drawn art. Now, whether you do it on a computer, all you can make out of that is a print.
Agree.
Prints are, you know, are just, you can make a dime, you know, you can print up anything. So there is no physical original done with paint, ink, or, you know, whatever it might be. There's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of loses something. Now, that kind of, you know, loses something right there. But, well, you know, as I said, I just, you know, I just feel they should know both. Yeah, definitely.
You know, the thing that I find is so interesting is, and, you know, again, I mean, I guess we're kind of, we're still talking about that, having something that's tactile, something that's something you can hold in your hands. One thing, you know, I mean, you know, I'm a middle-aged person, and I still know people who are younger than me that, there is some attraction to being able to hold on to something, you know, and be able to look at something, and don't get me wrong, I mean, you know, there is a certain allure to having a digital edition of a particular comic, and that's fine. That's what you like, and, you know, and something you can kind of easily access when you've got, you know, your equipment on the move. But I still like going through, and when I have an opportunity to go into a comic book store, you know, putting my hands on the books and looking through them, and, you know, and getting it's it feels like you're actually kind of you're picking your way through history. You know, I mean, a lot of people are just sort of this, you know, we had a discussion, and it was quite funny. One of the comments that was brought up is that the entire conversation or the piece in Kevin Smith's movies where they discuss the role of the inker in the comic book, and there's a joke made about, you know, I think it was actually
Chasing
Amy. That's right. And then of course they brought it back in Jane Silent Bob Strike Back, and where Chris Rock is basically belittling the inker of the comic books and calling him a tracer.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, I think as comic book fans, we don't even think of that. We don't care. We really don't care what it is that you do, or how they determine what you call it, or what the logistics behind it are. When we look at the finished product, we're like, you know, we're enthralled, we're enraptured in the story and the beauty of the art, and to be able to, I guess, absorb what we're seeing. And it's just so funny because it's a perspective that, you know, when somebody says, you know, like, oh, this guy, what did he do? Well, he was an anchor. Well, he was a wait, no. Just no. No, this person contributed to a piece of art.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you say to somebody who, you know, looked at the, you know, looked at famous architecture, architectural plans and built them, or sort of, you know, prepared them, you know, in a formal format for anybody to say, okay, well, they're just the copier or they're just the collator. I mean, seriously, no, everybody has a role to play. And I think what you do is just as important, if not more important than some of the other roles that we see. And, you know, I mean, we can honestly say without every stage being there, what the finished product would be something, I guess, lessened or cheapened.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you bring up that subject because as you were talking, I was thinking of back in the days when I was a kid going, you know, 7 or 8 years old, buying comics. I would be buying them off the local newsstand that was outside the subway. I was born in New York City, so I was buying them right off the newsstand. Before Marvel was Marvel, I was buying Tales of Suspense, Strange Tales. And
wow.
But they wouldn't be credited. There was no credit. But there was sometimes they would sign Steve Ditko, you would see an S Ditko on the splash of the page. Then there were these other two artists, which I thought was one person doing the major monster stories. It was Kirby Ayers. Now, I was a kid. I didn't know. I thought this was one guy. His name was Kirby Ayers. But I didn't realize till like, yes. I found, oh, it's a guy named Jack Kirby, and Dick Ayers is inking Jack Kirby. And actually, down through the years, Jack Kirby had so many different inkers on his work, and you could tell, though it was Jack's powerful storytelling and energy that he had in his work, you could tell there was something different from book to book because he would be inked by different people, from Joe Sinnott to Frank Giacoya to Vince Coletta on Thor. Sid Shores. I mean, I can go on and on and on and how many people have inked Jack down through the years. And I would see the difference, and I say there's something here, and it's got to be the inker making the person look a little bit different. So it isn't just a matter of just tracing lines. I thought it was when I was a kid, but you find out later as you get into the industry, you talk to people, you meet them at conventions down through the years, as I pointed out before, and you find out these guys are contributing to the work in and of itself and bringing forth the penciler and putting their own style to it. I've always found down through the years of working with Dick Giordano and Neil Adams at Continuity Associates, which is where I started in the summer of 74. So actually, just to go back a little bit, I've celebrated this past summer 40 years in the business.
So, oh, congratulations.
Oh, thanks. So I digress now. In working at the studio when I got out of the School of Visual Arts, after 3 years at that school, I learned more and more each day as I worked with both of these two giants of the industry, especially Neil, who brought, again, was like Steranko, brought a lot of cinematography to the comics and really changed the look of comics as well in and of himself. So I would learn back about what inking was definitively all about. It wasn't just a matter of following lines. I knew that beforehand, but he kind of maybe thought I was thinking along those lines because he wanted to make sure I didn't think about that anymore. So also to elaborate, a good inker can ruin that doesn't know anything about drawing. Say somebody who pencils tight lines. So for example, Barry Windsor Smith. He pencils everything. Everything is basically there. All the lines, all the rendering, everything is basically there. But if you give his beautiful work to an inker that really doesn't know what they're doing, has no knowledge of drawing, he can make it flat and really with no dimension at all and ruin the pencils. However, you give a job to an inker who really knows what they're doing, they will not only make it look really good, but they'll put their own, you know, their own take on it and will be teaching the pencil to say, here's the mistakes you made in your drawing, in your anatomy, in your backgrounds. So an inker could make or break a book depending upon who it is and because that's what you see printed.
Right. And do you find that you, as you said, you find that when you were inking the works that you're handed, that one of the biggest things that you felt you could do was really breathe life into the pencils by adding that shading and depth?
Yes, Yes, exactly. I would, I would never change the style of what is given to me. In other words, because I look at it differently, there's no, I should change it. No, that's not the way I work. I also had the forethought to actually learn from each, it's, even to this day, I learned from each penciler how to draw better. It really has taught me about drawing and not really, how they put down the line, but why they put down the line. Why is the shading here? Why are the blacks, designed this way? And that's how you learn. So I always try to bring forth the penciler from the pencils up rather than bearing with my style, because I don't really believe in that. You'll have somebody like Wally Wood, who's a giant in the industry in and of himself, working for EC Comics and right up to the 60s into the, the 80s. And when he would ink somebody, it would look like his stuff, but the important thing is that you still would see what was underneath. You still would see the penciler underneath, and it would still be there. So I have obviously the storytelling was there, but it'd be his rendering. But anybody who was inked by Woody would know what they were getting. And Woody was such a giant, such a genius, a genius about what drawing and inking was all about, and storytelling, of course. People didn't mind him, changing and fudging a little bit here, because that altogether is a different way to look at it.
Definitely. And speaking of, looking at things different ways, what would be your opinion, I guess, on how comics are perceived now compared to how comics were perceived when you started in the 70s, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge turnaround just from how they're perceived. I mean, even when I was young, I remember them being childish books, No self-respecting adult is going to read comics. Whereas now, I mean, it's a huge difference. What are your beliefs on that? What is your opinion?
Oh yeah, I mean I've seen it. I've seen it for years. I mean, when I was a kid, there's Robbie reading comic books then again, that type of thing. My parents really didn't mind. They didn't really scoff at me doing it, because a lot of times what I'd be doing, I'd be drawing. If there's a particular panel I liked, I would be sitting there drawing it, copying it, And I still have a lot of those copies to this day, which I think I might be posting on Facebook just for the heck of it, one of these days. I've done already. I already have a Steve Ditko drawing I copied many years ago. I found, just happened to find, and I did that already. But anyway, yeah, I would get that a lot. Why are you reading that junk? I mean, we all went through that. Mm. It's just such a total, 180 now. You can look. You don't have to be embarrassed or anything. I was never really embarrassed. I would read a comic book on a bus or whatever. I didn't really care if they looked at me. The funny, who cares? I really didn't care. Because I knew this is something I really wanted to get involved with if I could. There are no guarantees in life, but it's something I wanted to give it a shot for, and I'm really glad I did. But yeah, it's amazing how it's, because with not just that, with graphic novels and the movies helping out, making it a little more serious about that. But what's an interesting thing is that, I'm quite sure you guys know, comic books have been in the industry covertly for years. I mean, you have directors and producers looking at them, and they wouldn't say anything, but they were influencing directors. We probably wouldn't even, if we heard about a director nowadays, we heard about an old director looking at it, we wouldn't care. But back then, you would say, he looks at comics, and they would do it for influences, for a way to set up the camera and everything. Arnold Drake, who was a famous writer who wrote the Doom Patrol and did a lot of writing for DC and Marvel. Mm-hmm. And he, I spoke to him, and he actually got into the movie industry on a very super, on a very, low level. He, wrote and, for the movie, The Flesh Eaters. I don't know if you know that 50s old, I think it's an early 60s movie. It's one of those, B movies type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was talking to him about it because I remember seeing his name, and I said, I asked him when I finally met him. A couple of years before he passed away, he said, "Yeah, that's me. I wrote that movie." And he says, "I also wrote the rock and roll song that plays in the beginning of the movie with the girl and the boy in the boat." I said, "Okay." And then he starts to sing the song to me about this rock and roll song. He starts singing. You'd have to see The Flesh Eaters and watch the movie. I'm quite sure it might even be on YouTube for free. You got to take a look. But he told me eventually at the conversation, he told me, he says, directors we're looking at movie, with comic books for years, you know, to get ideas, to get different, you know, for camera shots and everything. That. Oh, he said they would be doing it for a long time. And I'm quite sure he didn't mention him by name, but it looks, I think Roger Corman, who's very into comics, I'm quite sure it definitively influenced him.
Yeah, I couldn't say that would not, you know, that cannot be not true. I mean, Roger Corman is would have to. I would say he's very heavily influenced by comics.
Oh yeah, definitely. But yeah, so I'm just glad it's changed, for the better, the attitude toward it. And you know, say, oh, you work for comics, and you know, actually, when I was starting up, people say, oh, you work for comics. It wouldn't be an insult, just say, well, that's an interesting career, they would say. Now it's like, oh yeah.
it's kind of funny, and I guess I kind of share this saying that I've had for a number of years, and that is, when I was in school, geek used to be a 4-letter word.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a 6-figure one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yes, exactly. I could agree with you more. Yeah, yeah. In a certain way, yes, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you find? I mean, are you planning on continuing for some time? I mean, just looking at your pedigree when it comes to comics and you've inked. Do you still find that there's that same passion now to continue doing it that you did, years ago?
Oh yeah, I mean, you have a lot of I would say things that happen that are disappointing as far as getting on a project. Then you find out a person doesn't particularly want you on a project. That happens, but that's only natural. That's kind of in the business. But I still, when I sit down and do the work, the work itself, I really love doing the work. And I don't think I can ever, if it ever came to that, I would have to say, I really don't want to do this anymore. But, it's how I make my living, and I really want to do the work. And whenever I'm doing, no matter how, what project it may be, I always put my heart and soul into it, because I think that's, if you do anything else, I think it's just not worth it, really. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, when you do something for so long, I guess one of the signs is that the fact that you're doing something right is that you still enjoy doing it day in and day out. I'm sure that we all can appreciate that there are days where our jobs aren't the glamorous career that we had hoped for.
Yeah.
Because it's particularly difficult, or there's some task or something that's happened along the way that has made it feel that way. But ultimately, when you when you average out over your entire career, mm-hmm. When you can look back and definitely say without hesitation that you enjoyed it and you had a passion for it, to me that spells success, and it's just nice. It's nice to see. I mean, when we talk about people going and going and continuing to do this, with the technology going, I guess, more towards a digital forum, it's nice to see that there is still some of the stalwarts holding on to the traditional methods. And I know for one, I hope I continue to see your work far into the future, as long as you're willing to do it. I just can't wait to see more.
Okay. I agree. Do you have anything new or exciting coming up that we could know about?
A couple of projects I'm working on now. I'm helping out. Sometimes I'll be asked to help out on a particular book, like ink about maybe 4 or 5 pages to help out, and they have different inkers because the book is very late. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm doing a couple of pages on Astro City, which is written by Kurt Busiek and penciled by Tom Grummet. So I'm given layouts, so I'm really drawing a lot more now than on these pages than before. In fact, I could just bring up a facet of a lot of times I will be given layouts, and I have done a lot of jobs in the past where it's just the line drawing, no blacks, no detail, just the basic storytelling, and I'll have to go in and add the detail and all the lighting effects and whatever I want to use. So that's another, there's another degree of where an inker should know how to draw and really be able to bring forth and bring dimension to that page. But, so I'm doing that project. I am doing another project with an artist named Guy Dorian Sr. for a book called C.O.R. which is an independent. And all this stuff is for independents. The other project with the Astro City, of course, is DC. Well, interesting enough, I'm working with the DC office, not in New York, but in California. So we keep, we keep in touch through email. So I know that they're basically going to go out there very soon. They're going to, DC is going to be moving out there, putting everything all in the one, under one roof.
Really? Wow.
So, yeah, and a few other little minor independence that can, projects that I can't go into now. But, yeah, that's
sure.
I'm still, you know, keeping, you know, staying in there. But what's interesting, the a lot of times the editors sometimes will not actually give you the work. They will an artist will – a penciler will say, oh, listen, I want to work with this inker, and I really want to keep him. So and the editor will just say, okay, that's fine. So but I came from a time where, you know, the editor will give out the work.
And, right.
You know, they would say, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. You're not have to, but can you want to do this? And then giving it's you have to do this, you have to do that. Because when I was starting to do backgrounds, I remember, you know, back in the heyday of going up to D.C. and giving backgrounds, I was working with Tex Blaisdell, Bob Oxner. I don't know if those two names mean anything to you, but they were around doing a lot of inking, a lot of drawing that, you know, as well, you know, themselves. And I would come up to the D.C. and hand in the pages. He'd hand me a couple more, and I'd go home and do them. And a lot of times Carmine Infantino would be there, you know, saying, you know, are you doing your work, Bob? I said, yeah, I'm doing it. So one time I was walking down. He thought the book was late because of me, and I'm walking down the hallway of D.C., and I'm, you know, happy-go-lucky guy. I'm bringing in my pages, and he looks at me, and he says, okay, Bob, you're dead. You're dead. And I said, and like I froze, and I said, uh-oh, my career's over. What happened? What did I do? So Tex Blaisdell, who's working right, he was working at a table right near Carmine, and he looks up at he should have put a Superman cape on, and he came to the rescue and said, no, that's fine, Carmine, everything's fine. No, it's not late. He goes, oh, okay, Bob, come on in, come on. So, you know, I said, excuse me, Carmine, while I put my heart back in my chest here, you know.
Yeah, thanks for the heart attack there. I needed that right now.
But, you know, these are things you go through. I mean, it's okay. And what you were just saying, like, you would be years later before Carmine and Patino passed away, I had inked him on Star Wars for a while. And that's another thing interesting. I was inking Star Wars for quite a long time on over Carmine Infantino. And actually, the first issue I did over on Star Wars was over Walter Simonson. That was the first time I inked him. Another great, I would say, one of the most phenomenal talents in the industry. It's still working today, which is great. And he, so Carmine, they put together the Two Morrows publications put together a whole Carmine Infantino book. And a lot of the work that I had done with Carmine, it was printed in that book. So I got my copy and I had Carmine sign it. And I said, Mr. Infantino, I said, you know, it's an honor to be in this book with you. And I really enjoyed inking your work. And he was old and feeble a little bit, but he understood what I was saying. He said, well, thank you very much, Bob. And I don't think he remembered me, but that's okay. That's all right.
Do you find that now, sort of, you know, where you are in the phase of your career that, you're starting to find that people are seeking you out because of the works that you've done? Or is it sort of just the, you know, are you finding more that, you know, I don't want to say that your time has passed because certainly it's not, but, you know, as we know, every generation brings in a whole new crop of artists and such like that. Do you find that that there's a lot of competition in that area?
Oh yeah, sure. Oh, you know, I mean it's been competitive for years since I got in, but you know now it's like you can get overwhelmed if you really, you know, think about it too much. But I think if you just do your work and become very and you just network, just. Let them know you're out there. They know who you are. They know who I am. So it's not like they don't know my work. But sometimes they don't. Some of the editors really don't know that you're available. So you have to go up and say, hi, I'm available. And they go, oh, you are. Okay.
Oh.
And pencilers as well. You go up to the pencilers and say, you know, if we can work together, that's fine. That's great. And so that's one thing good about networking at conventions. You go around, you talk, and you find out. And if there are opportunities, you know, you have to. It's kind of like interesting that some people say, well, Bob, you've been in the industry years. You don't have to network. I said, no, I have to network. Mm-hmm. There's no matter how long you're in the industry, you have to keep going. I mean, you have to really let them know you're out there. And yeah, I remember it was on a particular DVD of the Everyone Loves Raymond DVDs, and they had a particular part where they were interviewing all the different actors, and, you know, Peter Boyle, who had been in the industry for years, and they were surprised when he says, "Yeah, I had to read for the part of Brayman's father." And they said, and they, one of the questions is asked, "Well, why should you read the part? You've been in the industry." He goes, "I have. They have to see if I'm right for the part."
Right.
Sure. So, I mean, he knew that. That's the way it is. That's so. Yeah, the penciler has to, you know, or an editor has to find out if, you know, this is something I want to do, or this is something they want me to do. They may want some younger guy. That's fine. That's all right.
Well, I mean, in general, would you say that your years of experience in the field are helping or hindering your search for work nowadays?
I would say, you mean just the fact of being on the computer or in the internet?
I mean, kind of both. I mean, do you, you know, a lot of the pencilers that you work with and so on and so forth, do they look at your years of experience with this as a great help? You know, like, wow, you know, this guy did some great stuff, you know, on X Factor, Uncanny X-Men, you know, Man Thing. Or do they look at it and go, man, this guy just must be stuck in the past. I need some fresh blood.
Well, there's that too, that they want some fresh blood in there. And I think you show them that you can do still good work that can even have a modern look. That's fine too. I can ink pretty much any style. You know, I can do a very modern look. I can do a very classic look, depending upon who I'm working with.
Absolutely.
But you get some editors that say, I prefer, you know, a new look, a new person coming in. That's the nature of the beast, as they say. That's going to happen. So I don't really, find that. You know, I find it, the only thing I would say is disappointing is that you'll find a lot of young artists or editors, they'll say, oh, that's old. You know, they'll look at the past as that's old, that's insignificant, we can't learn from that. Well, that's not true. You can. What I mean, that means you can't learn from Michelangelo, you can't learn from Leonardo da Vinci?
Exactly.
I'm sorry, if they're old hat, then if they're old hat, then please, I'll take that anytime.
Yeah, exactly. Are you finding? I've been looking. You know, we did some research before we started the show. Are you finding that you're getting commission work as well? I mean,
oh, yeah.
People are coming.
Very much. I find I've done a lot of recreations of just certain covers that I've done. Then I've got a couple of recreations of some of Paul Smith's covers. For the X-Men, because apparently Paul might have charged too much, and they just wanted to get – they don't mind me doing it, even though Paul inked all of his own covers. They don't mind me doing it, considering I worked on the book anyway. So I've done a couple of those. And, yeah, and I'll get commissions where I'll just do, you know, a particular piece on they want – this one guy that likes – it's called One Minute Later he likes. He says, pick out a cover you like and do that cover 1 minute later, what your version of 1 minute later would be. I said, That's an interesting idea. I like that. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So I picked out the cover to Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 2. So I'm doing a 1 minute later for him on that one.
Oh, nice. Yes. That's really awesome.
Yes.
You mentioned conventions before. Do you have any other conventions planned, say, within the next 12 months?
I'm going up to Albany this coming, I think November 12th, I think it is. I'll have to look about that. And yeah, I'll be going up there for that weekend in Albany, and that's a pretty good show. I've never been there before, but I'm looking forward to that. I think if anybody Googles Albany Comic Con, they'll find it. They'll find out what the dates are and where it's going to be held. It'll be a 1 day thing on a Sunday. After that, I've been invited to Baltimore and a few other places that I'm going to set it up and all that kind of thing. I'm trying to stay in the tri-state area. The only big show I'd really like to go to, I'd like to save for, is the San Diego Con for next year, hopefully.
Yes, that'd be great. we're right now, one of the things that we've been able to do is to get in behind some inaugural cons that have been created. This year we've been asked to get behind them and help them, promote themselves a little bit.
Oh, great.
Recently they had PsyCon in Tampa, it's really good, and it's really good to see these little places come up with these conventions. With Albany Comic Con, which happens to be on November 9th of this year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Like I said, you go to these shows and you you get to basically, you get to interact with fans who might not be able to get to New York Comic Con or areas that can't get to San Diego Comic Con. I mean, it's really cool that you go to these shows and you can meet these people. And again, like, you know, we help promote SciCon Tampa. We're helping to promote Geekonomicon, which is in December. And again, a lot of people seem to have this attitude that, you know, like, hey, it's a small con, it's a first year thing, that it's not really worth it. And like I said, you know, it's really nice to see somebody like yourself. You know, you're going to these shows and, you know, you're there for your fans and, you know, specifically for people who can't make it to the bigger ones. So, you know, it's just really good to see. We're really, happy to know that you're going to still be making a circuit, even if it's just, you know, sort of in the tri-state area.
Yeah.
You're still out there with your fans.
Well, if there's one in Virginia, I'd go to one in Virginia, too. I don't mind going, you know, driving out that way, too, as well. But, as far as the little cons, you know what's good about them is that they're basically, for the most part, they're comics. That's the only thing I would say a little not disappointing, but the thing is comics at the big cons, you know, the one in New York and the one in San Diego, comics can get a little bit lost, and then because you got the TV shows, you got the movies, you got the cosplays now, characters all over the place. People have complained, you know, saying, well, then the artists are just like, you know, wallpaper. They're not paying attention. And I could see what their point is, because a lot of people are there just to dress up and walk around. They really don't care about the comic books. They don't really care about the artists or anything like that. And that's okay. That really doesn't bother me to a certain extent, only the fact that, you know, I think, if they have these small cons now where it's just comics, people are going there to see the artist, to get old comics or whatever it is. And they're really interested in the art and the writing of the books and, you know, and meet the writers as well. So I think, these little cons are good. And the fact that, the New York Con will put, I think they'll be putting on again, a comic books, convention, especially just for comics, I think in July or August.
Nice.
This coming year. They did one last year, and apparently it was successful, so they're going to do it again, which is nice. It'll just be in an artist's alley where the condo, that they'll just take up that room, and it's good. I mean, I'm glad they're not ignoring the fact that, you know, hey, if we work for comics, nobody be wearing these costumes or anything.
Exactly. We saw that, you know, today we were at the Tidewater Comic Con in Virginia Beach, and despite the fact there were a large number of convention goers that were in cosplay, one thing that was very clear is that there was a very heavy interest in comics, especially, we had guests there. Most of the guests there were actually directly involved in cartoons or comics. So, you know, in the artistic side of it anyways, you know, so again, despite the fact that we had a good turnout of people who were there as cosplayers, it was really nice to see that there was a very heavy comic presence. So, and I think that's going to contribute to the success of these shows as you go along. Hopefully we get a chance to see you down here in Virginia at some point, given the fact that I'm sure that this year's Tidewater Comic Con was a success, that they'll be doing one in 2015. And with any luck, maybe we'll see you down here.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be definitely great. Yeah, I would say just one more thing about that we say about the cosplays. You know, those been going on for years where people would wear a costume. You'd see like one or two or three at a convention, and then they would have a masquerade contest, contest. And I sometimes would be asked to be a judge of these contests. All the artists were judges. I mean, not all, but a lot of the judges were artists that they would ask me, would you like to judge the costume contest? And I'd say, yeah, sure. That sounds like fun. So, but they were there, the people, nine times out of ten, they were there for the comics as well, not just wearing the costume. And I remember judging one woman, she was dressed up, she was supposed to be Underdog. And about the weirdest time I ever had, and then she was disappointed. It's a whole big thing, you've probably heard of her, but I don't remember her name, but she'd get disappointed if you didn't pick her, and she'd start arguing with us why you didn't pick her. And I'm saying to myself, what am I doing here? What am I doing
here? Why, how did I get roped into this?
But anyway, that made it even more fun, you know, to be on one of those, to be a judge like that. So, yeah.
Well, Bob, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
I think we could, again, like most with most of our guests, we could just talk till the sun came up.
Sure.
But thank you again for being on the show with us, and we hope to get to speak to you again soon. We just like to say to everybody, when you look at the future of where comics are going, I think it's really important to look at the past as well, because if you don't honor where you came from, you can't honor where you're going to.
Yep, honor the people and the industry it was, yes.
All right, well, thanks everybody. Again, thanks, Bob, for being on the show with us. Obviously, everybody, to be sure to follow Bob's work and make sure to check him out at your local Comic-Con in the Tri-State area as he is as he makes the rounds. And, again, thanks for being with us tonight, and good night, folks.
Good night.
Red Shirt Geeks!
And that's all the time we have for this episode of the Red Shirt Interviews. I'm Laz D, the pseudo-Kiwi.
And I'm the devilishly delightful Dave.
That's tasty. Be sure to check us out on our website at RedShirtGeeks.com.
Shirt Geeks podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International license. Permissions beyond the scope of this license may be available at redshirtgeeks.com.